Welcome to HN Pod, your daily audio deep dive into the top stories, trends, and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Wednesday, August 5th, 2026, which means we are covering yesterday's top stories from August 4th. This is episode 478, and we have a truly fantastic lineup for you today.
We certainly do. Today, we are going to be talking about a deeply moving personal tribute from tech pioneer Stephen Wolfram, the growing indie web backlash against AI-generated images on personal blogs, a frustrating Xbox outage that proves physical media is not what it used to be, a fascinating show HN about mathematically generating diverse skin tones, and finally, a quick celebration of a major open source milestone with FFmpeg 9.0.
It is a great mix of the deeply human and the highly technical, which is exactly what Hacker News is all about. Let us jump right into our top story.
Our top story yesterday pulled in nearly 1,200 points. It is a blog post by Stephen Wolfram titled, In Memory of My Wife, Elise Colley, with Thanks for 36 Wonderful Years.
This was a really tough one to read. Stephen Wolfram is a massive figure in the computer science and mathematics world. He's the creator of Mathematica and Wolfram Alpha, and he's known for a very distinct, often highly technical, and sometimes self-referential writing style. But this piece was entirely different. It was raw, vulnerable, and just a beautifully detailed tribute to his wife, who passed away very suddenly.
The level of detail he included is staggering. In the Hacker News comments, people immediately pointed out that Wolfram has been meticulously lifelogging for decades. He actually has a system where almost every conversation and interaction is tracked. One commenter mentioned a story where someone met him at a conference and later received an email from Wolfram's office with an assigned conversation number for future reference.
Right. And normally, the Hacker News crowd might poke fun at that level of intense personal data tracking. In fact, it sparked a side conversation in the comments about personal CRM software like Monica, and whether anyone still uses those tools to track their friendships. But in this context, that meticulous record keeping allowed him to paint this incredibly vivid picture of their 36 years together. There is a line in the piece that just devastated the commenters. He wrote, "Somehow in the shock of what has happened, it feels as if I just met Elise, and now she is gone."
A commenter named Radanova pointed out how true that is. 36 years can contain an entire life and still feel impossibly brief once the person is gone. Another commenter shared how they met Wolfram at an AI conference a few years ago and found him to be the kindest, most grandfatherly person, completely opposite to the pontifical image some have of him.
It really shifted the community's perspective on him. The consensus was that he wasn't trying to impress the reader here. He was just trying to preserve as much of Elise as he could while the memories were vivid. Another commenter quoted a heartbreaking hope to eventually pass away at the exact same time as their spouse, referencing how John Nash and his wife died together in a taxi crash. It is a stark reminder that behind all the code, the algorithms, and the tech debates we have on Hacker News every day, we are all just human beings dealing with love, loss, and the cruel passage of time.
That is a beautiful way to put it, Mike. And it actually transitions well into our next story, which is fundamentally about preserving human connection on the internet. The post is from a blog by Nelson Figuerella titled, AI-generated images discourage me from reading your blog. It got around 750 points.
Nelson makes a very blunt point that I think a lot of us are feeling in 2026. He says he has a growing hatred for AI-generated images on indie blogs. Corporate blogs, sure, we expect the synthetic stock photos by now, but on a personal blog, seeing an AI image immediately makes him wonder if the text is also AI generated.
He actually says he would rather see a poorly drawn Microsoft Paint image than a polished AI graphic. And honestly, I completely agree with him. When you visit an independent blog, you are there for the author's personal thoughts, their idiosyncrasies, their unique voice. The AI images, no matter how good the prompting is, have this distinct, frictionless sheen to them that just screams lack of effort.
Exactly. It breaks the trust between the writer and the reader. We are living in an era where the web is flooded with synthetic content. Finding organic, human-written content feels like finding a diamond in the rough. When you slap a Midjourney or Dolly image at the top of your heartfelt essay, it cheapens the whole thing. It triggers that dead internet theory anxiety we all have right now.
It is an uncanny valley of authenticity. We want the rough edges. We want the MS Paint diagrams. It proves a human was there. It is a strong signal for indie web creators going forward. If you want people to trust your voice, keep the robots out of your header images. Let your human imperfections show, because that's exactly what we are looking for.
Speaking of things that frustrate the community, let's talk about the Xbox outage. The post is from the Birch Tree blog titled, "Xbox Goes Down. You Can't Play Games You Own on Disk." It got over 600 points.
This one fired up the classic Hacker News DRM debate. Over the weekend, there was an extended Xbox network outage, but it did not just stop people from playing multiplayer or digital games. It actually blocked people from playing games they owned on physical disks.
The author makes a great comparison. They bought an analog pocket a couple of years ago and popped in a 20-year-old Game Boy cartridge of Golden Sun. It just worked. No network check, no server ping. But today, a disk is essentially just a physical plastic receipt for a digital license. You put it in the drive, and the console still has to phone home to Microsoft to verify you are allowed to play it. And then it probably has to download gigabytes of updates anyway.
The comments on this were a mix of outrage and resignation. One user shared a hilarious but sad story about trying to play the Master Chief Collection offline with their girlfriend. They downloaded 30 gigabytes via Steam, launched the game, and were greeted with a mandatory Microsoft login screen that looked like a web browser embedded in the game. After creating an account, giving their name, birthday, and verifying emails, they had to do a 5-minute anti-bot captcha that just kept looping. They eventually just gave up and turned it off.
That is the modern gaming experience in a nutshell. Another commenter chimed in saying this is why they took a 25-year break from Microsoft products, only to be dragged back in because their kid wanted to play Minecraft, which now requires the same convoluted Microsoft account process. It led to a broader discussion about why Windows remains so dominant despite these terrible user experiences. One user pointed out that it is a complex ecosystem of gaming, IT departments, and legacy software that keeps people locked in, rather than the merits of the operating system itself.
It also inevitably led to a discussion about piracy as preservation. When the legal way to play a game you paid for fails because a server in Redmond went down, people justify cracking the software just to get what they paid for. It is a stark reminder that in 2026, you do not really own your media unless it is DRM-free. It's why we see so many Hacker News readers sticking to PC gaming, Linux, and storefronts like GOG that actually let you keep the offline installer files.
Let's pivot to something really constructive. We had a great show A-Chain yesterday titled Simple Algorithm and Color Space to Generate Diverse Skin Tones. It got almost 500 points.
I loved this one. The creator, who goes by Automotony, was frustrated with how hard it is to pick plausible but diverse skin tones for digital art and character creators in games. Usually, you either get 5 preset shades, or you get the entire 16 million color RGB wheel and have to guess. So they decided to mathematically define a color space specifically for human skin.
The methodology is fascinating, even if the author admits it is a bit unscientific. They built a UI to manually label tons of RGB colors as either plausible skin tones or not. Then they took that data, which looked like a weird banana shape in 3D space, and used principal component analysis, or PCA, to transform it into a sphere that is much easier to sample from programmatically. They even provided Python and JavaScript snippets showing how to uniformly sample from this sphere using rejection sampling.
The Hacker News comments took this to a whole new level of scientific depth, as they always do. A user named Dr. Scully popped into the thread mentioning their doctoral thesis. They explained that biologically, skin color can actually be parameterized using just two main variables, melanin and hemoglobin concentration. Because of that, the color space is naturally roughly two-dimensional.
That blew my mind. Another user remembered a children's museum book from 1994 called Earth Search that had a physical color wheel made of two spinnable pieces of tinted acetate over a grayscale gradient. It claimed to be able to generate any human skin tone, which perfectly aligns with that two-layer biological model of melanin and hemoglobin.
The thread went deep into the biology of it all. People talked about subsurface scattering, which is what gives 3D rendered skin its lifelike glow instead of looking like plastic. They also discussed atypical conditions that affect skin color, like Gilbert syndrome, which can cause a slight yellowing due to bilirubin, or the famous Blue Fugates of Kentucky, who had elevated methemoglobin levels causing blue skin.
It is such a perfect Hacker News intersection of topics. You have the technical implementation with PCA and math, the biological science of chromophores, and the social aspect of making digital spaces more inclusive. The creator even linked to essays on colorism and the historical biases in photography and makeup. It is just a fantastic, well-rounded project that gives developers a practical tool to make their ops better.
Finally, we have to give a quick shout out to a piece of software that essentially holds the entire digital video world together. FFmpeg version 9.0, codenamed Lay, was released yesterday.
Good old FFmpeg. It got over 400 points, and there were not even that many comments on the release notes, but it always shoots to the front page because of sheer respect. If you have ever watched a video on the internet, converted an audio file, or used a streaming service, you have relied on FFmpeg.
It is the ultimate unsung hero of open source software. Version 9.0 comes just 4 months after 8.1, showing how active the development still is. We won't bore you with the deep technical changelog, but we just wanted to acknowledge the maintainers. Thank you for keeping our media playing smoothly, year after year.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of HN Pod. We covered a lot of ground today, from the deeply personal reflections on life and loss, to the frustrations of modern digital ownership, and all the way to the math behind human skin tones.
We really did. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to read any of the articles or dive into the comments we discussed, you can find the links on Hacker News. We will be back tomorrow to cover the best of today's stories.
Until then, keep building, keep learning, and maybe try drawing your next blog header in MS Paint. Have a great day, everyone.